money that we need. Cause if we're only mouths to feed, I know no matter what you say, there's some debts you'll never pay. Working for the church while your family dies. You take what they give you and you keep it inside.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lawrence Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He is the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Michel.
Well, thanks for having me again.
And my understanding is that the fate of the payroll tax cut now is somewhat in doubt, because even though the Senate passed it overwhelmingly, 89 to 10, this 2 month extension, now John Boehner of the House has said that the Senate's just tried to kick the can down the road, and they're opposed to the Senate plan in the House. So what do you think is the fate of this tax, which I think, you know, is going to mean a lot to a lot of people in this country?
Well, I don't know what the fate is, but I know what's at stake. Right now, unemployment has dipped recently to 8.6%, but I suspect it'll shoot back up a little bit. And economists expect the unemployment rate to, you know, remain that high throughout the whole rest of the year. And that's assuming that we do get the payroll tax holiday. The reason the payroll tax holiday is important is that by providing some extra money for people, it supports about 1 million jobs. The spending that will result from the tax holiday will, throughout the economy, stimulate it and support 1 million people all throughout the economy. And if we don't do it, we'll lose those 1 million jobs, because those are jobs that are, you know, already existing. You know, that the payroll tax holiday already exists, the spending is out there. So that's what's at stake. There's also at stake the Emergency Unemployment Benefits Program, which is associated with around 500,000 jobs. I mean, when people get federal unemployment benefits after they're unemployed for 26 weeks, which is what the case is now, and they get a lot more weeks if you're in a state with very high unemployment, that not only helps those who are really hurt by the recession, but by their spending, they support 500,000 jobs. So both of those things are really at stake, and extending them for just 2 months, it is kicking it down the road, and, it would be good just to settle it and get those things in place all year.
But isn't it, this is more about politics than about public policy, isn't it? I mean, attaching the oil pipeline, the Canadian tar sands oil pipeline to it, is clearly a political act, isn't it, on the part of the Republicans, to give them political cover. Otherwise, yeah, they would be exposed to the charge, which is entirely accurate, that they are once again going to the wall, going to the mat for the millionaires and billionaires, because they refuse to have a slight surtax on millionaires and billionaires to pay for the extension of the payroll tax cut. That's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
I think it is. You know, I mean, from my perspective, you don't even need to do these things and pay for them, because it's okay if we actually were to cut spending to pay for a payroll tax holiday, then it would not really give much of a boost to the economy, because where you put in spending into the economy with one hand, you're taking it out with the other. So, I mean, we're already at, in my view, an inadvisable policy of paying for it. But yes, now the debate is how do you pay for it? The Democrats wanting to pay for it with a tax on the very wealthy, which is to me obviously a reasonable thing to do, and it's the thing that would least hurt in terms of taking spending out of the economy, because the very wealthy save a lot of the income that they have, and that tax would be paid out over many, many years. So it would not be something that would take spending out of the economy this year. The Republicans want to do more wage freezes and cutting of federal employment. And I think that is something that will actually hurt the economy. take spending out of the economy. So, yeah, now, you know, the Republicans are, you know, in some views with showing their hypocrisy. I mean, they're for every tax cut except one like the payroll tax, which goes to the vast majority. But it's really not a permanent tax cut because it's really would last for another year. And I think it's also important for people to know that although this means that people are not putting money into the Social Security Trust Fund, that the general budget actually reimburses the Social Security Trust Fund. So there's nothing about the payroll tax holiday that would adversely affect the Social Security system, even though some people like to claim that it would.
So do you think then, Lawrence Michel, that the White House and the Democrats have dropped the ball in terms of turning the screws on? Because clearly this is making the Republicans nervous in an upcoming election year to be so flagrantly showing fealty towards the super wealthy and denying the middle class a tax break when, as you've just pointed out, they've always been the champions of tax cuts. But in this case, they won't give tax cuts for the vast majority of middle and working Americans.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, there, for some reason, the Democrats are blinking. You know, they're unwilling to let the tax cut go away and then have a public fight over who was responsible for it. And they're allowing the Republicans to blackmail them with regard to, you know, things like attaching this oil pipeline to the deal. So, you know, I think at some point, if you're unwilling to fight, then you're always going to end up with a bad bargain. And I'm afraid that's what happens frequently with this president.
And the House, too, though. I mean, how hard are they fighting? You know, I don't understand why they can't make more out of this winning issue.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is that it has to really catch people's attention, and not everyone in the public is paying attention to this. And,
right.
And when, you know, if you really do want to make political hay out of a fight like this, then you've got to be willing to let there be a real conflagration. And it seems like, you know, people are unwilling to do that. And, you know, that's somewhat understandable. You don't want people like the unemployed hurting in January because benefits haven't been passed, et cetera. But when they act like this, they really are subject to blackmail, just like the president was blackmailed on the debt ceiling debate. You know, just because the Republicans were obviously willing to, you know, let everything blow up the whole economy, they then, you know, gave away a lot, in my view. So, you know, it's a bad habit.
So, again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. So what's happened then? You know, the problem here is, of course, that the American people have turned off Congress altogether. It's kind of a plague on both the houses. The support for the Congress is down to 9%. But I'm just wondering whether there's any way for the public to understand something did happen and something changed there in terms of their ability to work together. And it seems to me a lot of it has to do with the arrival of Newt Gingrich, who's running for president now. And I think he brought to Washington a kind of poisonous, angry politics of no compromise. And then you have also the additional factor of religious zealotry, which by nature is not interested in compromise. So you have a really nastiness there on Capitol Hill. And people that really don't want to, they just want to grind the other side into the ground. So you have a battle between kind of ideological thuggery and ideological timidity and weakness on the Democratic side. That's the way it seems to be to me.
Well, it is sort of surprising how, with the Democrats having the White House and the Democrats having the majority of the Senate, how much of the debate revolves around extremely conservative Tea Party-type notions of economics. Sometimes if somebody is willing to really hold to their position, they can, manipulate the other side, especially if the other side is afraid to fight. And I think that's the way I seem to, see how it plays out. But I think you have to play it differently. You have to be willing to stand up strong for what you believe. And, you know, it's not as if there's easy to find common ground. There are really, really different visions of what's good for America, what we want, and how to get there from different economic perspectives between the Tea Party Republicans and the Democrats. That needs to really be elaborated for people so that they can choose in the next election.
Well, I suppose that's the hope on the part of the Democrats, that we're the adults in the room, we're being reasonable, we're trying to do the people's business, and these other people are bomb throwers. But, you know, there's also an expression in America, nice guys finish last.
Well, the thing is that the media doesn't always report. They tend to always go into a he said, she said reports about how things are, and you would think that there's something dysfunctional about Congress rather than, I guess, in my perspective, that the Republicans are very ideological and wrongheaded and view any kind of compromise as sinful. So it's not really, that both sides aren't willing to try to do something. It's really one side.
Well, that became apparent, I think, in the government shutdown, that the way...
With the debt ceiling debate, it was absolutely.
Yeah,
and in some ways, I'm glad that they were like that, because the Democrats were surrendering and offering things that I think would be very bad policy for the country. And I think if the Republicans had said yes, they would have gotten 90% of what they wanted. And because they didn't get 100%, they said no. And I think for that reason, we've escaped some really bad policies. So, in some ways, I'm appreciative of their not allowing the Democrats to surrender. But it's amazing that the way the media reports it is as if somehow the Democrats aren't willing to compromise, when in fact I think they've gone way too far in offering compromises.
Well, that does seem to be a problem, that in this kind of binary way that the press operates, with thesis, antithesis, synthesis, the pro, the con argument, and then a kind of meaningless mush. And it's difficult and impossible, particularly for, parts of the media that are funded by the government, like NPR, to really be clear about who's at fault. It's a huge failing. But on the other hand, the president does have the bully pulpit. He has the ability. I mean, he did not make a stand on the Defense Authorization Act in favor of the Bill of Rights when that whole thing is being so clearly driven by John McCain and Lindsey Graham for political purposes, to paint Obama as being weak and to force him to keep Guantanamo open and violate a campaign promise that he made. And McCain has gone to the floor just in the last few days, just saying the most outrageous things about the president over pulling out of Iraq, that to me indicates that McCain's lost his mind. He's still so bitter about losing that he's completely lost all perspective.
I think that's pretty much right.
I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but we're not in the Beltway here and where I'm talking to you from. So I'm sort of hoping to get some kind of perspective from somebody that's been a veteran observer of Beltway politics.
Well, it's amazing to me that there's not more urgency from everybody here to address the high unemployment we have. I mean, it still is 8.6%, roughly 9%. And it's not as if the 91% are okay, because there are many, many families have somebody who has lost wages, lost benefits, has their work hours cut back. Many people are unemployed. Many people are underemployed in terms of in a job that's beneath their skill level or working too few hours. And that affects many, many people over the course of a year. We estimate, something like 30% of the workforce will be unemployed or underemployed at some point during the year. So this is really a widespread hurt, and I think the whole issues of continuing the emergency unemployment benefits, continuing the payroll tax holiday, these are things that are vital for keeping spending going in the economy so that we don't see higher unemployment. And what we should be doing is many, many more things to actually drive the unemployment rate down.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Lawrence Michel.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. And we're going to take a brief station break now and be back talking about unrest in Kazakhstan.